Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 14, entitled The Forest of Enjoyment, text number 19. And it is in prose, so we will not chant it altogether, because that's difficult. Kvachicca dushahena kayabhyantara vanina grita sarasvakum kutumbaya krujyati kvachicca. And sometimes dusahina, unbearable, kaya abhyantara vanina, because of the fire of hunger and thirst within the body, grihita shara, whose patience is exhausted, svakutumbaya, and to his own family members, krujyati, he becomes angry. Translation: sometimes, due to bodily hunger and thirst, the conditioned soul becomes so disturbed that he loses patience and becomes angry with his own beloved sons, daughters, and wife. Thus, being unkind to them, he suffers all the more. Purport: Srila Vijayapati Thakur has sung, Tatale Shakaite Bari Bindu Sama Shuta Mita Ramani Samaj. The happiness of family life is compared to a drop of water in the desert. No one can be happy in family life. According to the Vedic civilization, one cannot give up the responsibility of family life. But today, everyone is giving up family life by divorce. This is due to the miserable condition experienced in family life. Sometimes, due to misery, one becomes very hardened towards his affectionate sons, daughters, and wife. This is a part of the blazing fire of the forest of material life. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Gyanandana Salakaya Shakshurinitamina Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Ajnana Timarandasya Gyanandana Salakaya Shakshurinitamina Tasmai. It's interesting that when someone is not smiling at us, we immediately think, oh, this person doesn't like me. We never consider that maybe he has a toothache, right? Or, you don't think like that. You think, oh, no, it's me. He doesn't like me. It's a hell of a day, right? Don't smile at anybody. Right? So we have this tendency to apply everything to ourselves. That's because we think we are the center of the universe and everything is just rotating around us. And this habit is so deep that we just... But it is a fact that in the material world, many circumstances are irritating and agitating our mind. And then from that platform, we enter into relationships, you have to come now. He's so unfriendly. No, he's just overworked. It's not unfriendly, he's overworked. Too much pressure upon a person. So like this, the three modes of material nature are creating a lot of stress upon the living being, which manifests in the threefold miseries, the tapatraya, adhyatmika klesh, adibhautika and adidaivika klesh. Klesh means suffering, and it's either caused by one's own body and mind, either caused by other living beings, or caused by natural circumstances. And then what to do? So these things are creating difficulty for the living being, and then from that we create difficulty for each other. So what to do? And yet, the title of the chapter is The Forest of Enjoyment, which is a metaphor for the material world. So in other words, we are in this material world with a desire to enjoy, and our aim is to enjoy, but the reality brings so many other elements into it, where we have to deal with disturbed relationships, deal with so much disturbance. It is said that in the age of Kali, the living beings are upadruta, always disturbed by something. Always something going on. If it's not the body, then it's the mind. And if it's not the mind, then it's the weather or some other material condition. Therefore, one must not develop so much faith and hope about material enjoyment. Prabhupada said, as far as material life is concerned, we are pessimistic. As far as spiritual life is concerned, we're very optimistic. We are not thinking, it will work out, the material energy. It may work out for a while, but in the end it doesn't work out. One day it will not work out, because one day we're really going to die. That's the point. So material life is not successful, no matter what we take on. Prabhupada many times pointed out, birthdays are celebrated, but why you're celebrating that you have less life? Big party, and 1 year less. What are we celebrating? We're dancing on the grave, if you think about it. So in this way, from the material point of view, it's not getting better. With old age, one cannot eat this, one cannot do this, one cannot remember this. Like the man I met on the airport with the t-shirt, which said, heard it all, seen it all, done it all, but can't remember it all. which I thought was a good t-shirt. And what to say? We are in this way, in the material world, gradually we lose our power little by little. Of course, we gain some experience by the years, and that is a new power. But even then, gradually we lose our capacity. So it's not surprising that with aging, many people, materialistic people, are becoming depressed. But for a devotee, it's different. Because time works in our favor. Just if we simply every day go to the temple and every day see Krishna, that works in our favor. If every day we offer just a little flower to Krishna or to Prabhupada, that works in our favor. And over the years, that just adds up. An even fact that we lose the facility for material enjoyment is in our favor, because it will just focus us more on Krishna. Like my grandmother said, after my grandfather died, one man came and made a marriage proposal. And she said, I'm getting too old for those things. Which, is a fact, right? Why start again, so late in life? So, as we are getting older, it is only an advantage for devotional service. in old age, all the service that we have done for a lifetime adds up. It adds up. So it's only getting better, even automatically. Prabhupada used to say that anyone in the temple, whenever we are in the temple, we're making spiritual advancement. Even when you're sleeping in the temple, at least you're sleeping in the temple. So even that is auspicious. So in that way, any moment spent in the temple is a blessing. So we're automatically blessed. Whenever we see a devotee, we see someone with tilak. It is mentioned in the Hari Bhakti Vilas that when you see someone with tilak, that person is blessing. So we're getting so many blessings throughout the day. So being a devotee, automatically we get blessings, even if we are not endeavoring for it. That is the auspiciousness. So therefore also, aging is for us a favorable factor. We are happy that we are making spiritual advancement. This morning I was reading a letter of a 27-year-old girl, aspiring disciple of mine, who was last year still very happy and full of hope, but now that she's diagnosed with cancer, not so happy anymore. And now that the cancer is progressed to a stage where the tumor is in the chest, in the esophagus, so close to the heart that they can't really do much about it. Basically, in a nice way, they told her some statistics, and that practically very few people survive, and so on. And in other words, they told her, "You're gonna die." And she is saying that, now expressing regret for all the things she never did, both materially and spiritually. How she didn't live her own life. And that is actually not only something that young people say. She's 27, so it's kind of understandable that she is expressing that, that like, yes, so many things I still wanted to do, so many things I still desired, and now not possible anymore. Regretting that. And she said she was regretting that she didn't live more the life of her heart, but had always adjusted to the social norm, always had done what others wanted her to do. Yeah. But some time ago, I read something, of all places, on Facebook. Yeah, I know you shouldn't quote Facebook maybe as an authoritative source in Bhagavatam lectures. But I read there something from a nurse, right? A nurse who was basically doing that care for people in the final stages of their life. And she had interviewed hundreds of people, right, who were in the last moments of their life. And she asked them, what would they do different if they could do it again? And they all said that they would have lived more according, they would live more according to their heart now. They would not be so much lived by what others wanted of them, but they would like try to like really, yes, live the life that they believed in. So that is interesting, because we see that even those who are old are exactly in the same position as that young lady, that they have the very same mood, that not satisfied and with what I've done, not complete, still wanting to do more and regretting now that I didn't live more the life of my heart, more pursuing what I really wanted. But what if we would have pursued what we really wanted? It still wouldn't have been enough. The problem in life, the problem in life is that A, that you have no choice, and the other one is that you have to always make choices, right? You have to make choices, and if you choose one thing, it means you can't have the other. So it's very difficult, because you choose something, and you have to choose, is this good? Yeah, okay, you can have it, but then it means you want to have something else. And that is difficult, very difficult about choices all the time. Choice in life. Very hard to make choices. And then you make a choice and it's okay, but then you think of what you could have had and what you could have been. You could have been, yeah. What if I would have made the other choice? I could have been if I would have made another choice 40 years ago. What would I be now? Well, it's like, oh. Yeah. And then sometimes you didn't get it. Like, actually, the first time I wanted to take sannyas was in 1984. But my guru said, too late now, then you shouldn't have gotten married. He was right. Yeah. And so then I was married for many, many years, which was good for me in many ways. No comment. But we make choices like that. And sometimes the mind thinks, but what if I would have made the other choice? Imagine I would have been a sannyasi from 1984, so many years now. That would have been... where could I have been now, and what could I have not achieved, and so on. And it's all about... If you look at the root of these kind of thoughts, then it's simply the desire to be a complete success in the material world, which nobody ever can be. It is not possible. The only one who is successful in life is one who is a pure devotee of Krishna. He can be fully successful. And then in devotional service, one can come to a point where one is fully satisfied. And in nothing else will one ever be fully satisfied. It is not possible. No matter what we do, we will not be satisfied. It is said that Yudhisthira Maharaj, the Pandavas were, their father had died. They were brought up by Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra was trying to put his own sons on the throne, right? And they were denied their kingdom. A lot of tension arose, and it started to look worse and worse. And finally, the elders, such as Bhishma, such as Vidura, such as Drona, they all told Dhritarashtra, give them half of the kingdom, give it to them now, or it's going to be a major war. So Duryodhan was against it, but finally the elders managed to convince Dhritarashtra. So one morning he announced, I have decided to give half of the kingdom to the Pandavas. And then he announced which half. And it was like a piece of desert that he was offering them. And there was a piece of land which had been cursed by some sage, and that's what they were going to give us, the kingdom for the Pandavas. So like, the elders were sort of looking like, oh my God, but they didn't say anything. And then the Pandavas accepted it. And then Krishna was on their side. So Krishna called Indra, and he told Indra to sprinkle nectar over that land. And suddenly that land became very fertile. And that land became very wonderful. And then there was some arrangement where once Krishna and Arjuna came upon Agni, who wanted to eat a certain fire, who needed to eat a certain forest. That's the word, yeah. A certain forest. Because in that forest there were some herbs, some medical herbs that Agni really needed, because Agni had gotten too much ghee You know, I mean, all the ghee that's offered in sacrifice caused indigestion. So Agni needed some herbs to fix up his stomach, and for that needed to eat that particular forest. But then, somehow or other, in that forest, actually, there were many envious creatures living, snakes and all kinds of beings. But there was one snake, named Taksha, who somehow or other had helped Indra one times and had blessings from Indra. So Indra was protecting that forest. And each time Agni tried to eat that forest, Indra would send huge rains and put out the fire. So Agni had a difficult position. So then he asked Arjuna to help. And then Arjuna, with arrows, he shot so many arrows that it made an umbrella over the forest. And the rain could not penetrate. And in that way, Agni could eat the whole forest. And was very happy and so on. So, but one demon was somehow or other saved, Maya Danava, and then he built that amazing palace, right? That beautiful palace for the Pandavas. So in that way, they became more wealthy than even the Kurus. Right? And then, upon the desire of Narada and other authorities, they started to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. So a Rajasuya sacrifice actually means that Yudhisthira was to be crowned as the emperor of the world. That's actually what it means, Rajasuya sacrifice, that he became the emperor of the world. So the first had to conquer, all the kings and all the brothers went conquered, and then they had this big, big yagya. And in that yagya, Yudhisthira was being crowned as the emperor of the world, but that was not interesting to him. He didn't care about that part of it, because what he did in the yagya is there was a time to glorify the most respectable person, and at that time Yudhisthira glorified Krishna and established to the whole world. The whole world was watching. You know, it's something like the moon landing, when the whole world is watching, you know, something big, you know, like the whole world was watching. Yudhisthira is being crowned as the emperor, and then he spoke out in public, or arranged that Sade spoke out and established Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in that way, in front of the world, established Krishna as the topmost. So that was very satisfying to Yudhisthira. And it is said that Yudhisthira completely satisfied all his desires. So it is possible in the material world to satisfy all one's desires if the blessings of Krishna are there. Only then. Otherwise, we will never satisfy all our desires. Never, ever. Never. Impossible. Yeah, it doesn't matter what you get. Said, well, but let's at least satisfy part of our desires then. That's also useless, because we'll still be unfulfilled. Yeah. But all right, try to satisfy part if you wish so. But no sinful desires can be satisfied. It is as simple as that. We have no objection against satisfying our desires. Go ahead, try. It won't work, but sometimes it seems to work for a while, but then it doesn't, I'm sorry to say. And that is what this chapter is telling us. But try, but not in a sinful way. As simple as that. But one who is dedicating all energy to Krishna, one who is walking that higher path, right, that person becomes blessed. That person becomes blessed with success. Etavats janmasa falyam dehinam iha dehisu pranirata diyavacha sriyamacharanam sada. If we try to go for some enjoyment in the here and now, prayer for the immediate enjoyment,
We'll get some, but we still have these moments where with everything we have, we just sigh. What's wrong with you? I don't know. That sort of unfulfilled state of consciousness, in spite of everything, that will be there. But when we take to Krishna, to serving Krishna, all the blessings will come. Everything will become transformed, step by step. It will become more and more magic. Every moment will be full of magic and meaning. Every moment, yes, will be rich. And every moment, yes, will be there will be progress. That is spiritual life. Therefore, being a devotee is the only way. And all other desires, everybody has them. But everybody thinks that, yeah, but my desire is special. It is, because I feel it very deep. Now, others, they may also have desires, but I feel it like from the bottom of my heart, from my whole heart. And it's like, and therefore, you know, I mean, I understand everyone has material desires, but no one feels it the way I feel, and therefore I have to pursue it. Everybody feels it like that. Yeah. Everybody feels that these desires are like so fundamental to my whole existence. They mean everything to me. This is so important to me. It's all rubbish. Yeah? And that's why Prabhupada said, just give me one lifetime. Prabhupada said, you have tried so many lives. Anadi bahir mukha. Since time immemorial, we have tried to fulfill our desires. Now give this one life to me, Prabhupada said. One life, do as I asked. That's what he said. So, that's still there today, right? It's not that that's only for those who met Prabhupada in person. That's for all of us. That order still stands, because Prabhupada, he basically gave us the program of how to be Krishna conscious in this modern age. And we are all upholding that. And those who are dedicated to that, to kind of living by what Prabhupada gave us, is they begin to flourish. In their life, the blessings come. And those who are sort of umming and eyeing and trying to cut corners and trying to sort of justify their material desires and find a way that like they can bend things, right? Yeah. Somehow or other, those who are looking for loopholes, they will not be happy. One devotee told me, yeah, I'm not chanting anymore because I just have no taste. So it's like, okay. And finally, you know, like the bottom line that I could tell that devotee, because I couldn't tell that devotee, you must chant. Yeah, I could say you must chant, but then still the same answer. Yeah, I know, but I have no taste. Of course, I said, well, taste or no taste, that's not the point. The point is, it's about making spiritual advancement. Yeah, I know, but I have no taste. Right? So I tried different things, and nothing seemed to work. Right? Nothing seemed to work. The answer was all the time the same. No, I have no taste. So then my final answer was, it's okay that it's all good and well that you have no taste. But know one thing. Know that for you, it is too late. You already went too deep. No matter what you do, you're going to be a devotee. You have only two options. Either to be a happy devotee or to be an unhappy devotee. And now it's up to you. Okay. And that's the case, you know. That's really our choice. I mean, it's gone too deep. At one point, it's just Krishna is too much in our life. Right? You may struggle and think, oh, it's too narrow for me. Oh, I need some more freedom. I've tried it for a while, but now I've reconnected with myself, and I really feel, I feel I have to really, express myself now. I have a strong need for that. Yeah. Yes, which means basically, now I want to take up my material desires, pursue, satisfy them. Fine, but it's too late. Realize that. We're not going to be able to forget. There was one devotee. He came one day in my office and he wanted to leave. And I tried to talk him out of it, but he said, no, I want to enjoy. I want to enjoy. I said, just stay here, you'll enjoy. No, I want to enjoy in the world. So he left. And he was in India, and he was, falling down to some old hippie habits, and he started, and he tried to enjoy, and it didn't work. Now, this devotee was very tall. He was very tall. Anyway, one day he said, Krishna, it's not fair. I want to enjoy, but I can't because I have this higher knowledge. Yeah? So how can I enjoy? Every time I'm there, I always know this is all temporary. How can I enjoy anything, So then, he said, Krishna, this is not fair. Then Krishna fulfilled his desire. All right, you want to forget? No problem. It was in India, and when you're tall in India, you have to be careful, because there are ceiling fans, right? And yes, one day, he stuck his head in the ceiling fan. Anyway, after seeing the entire universal form of the Lord and all the planetary systems and so on, he sort of came to his senses, and then because of the bang on his head, he forgot. He actually forgot. And then he started to enjoy his senses, and yes, no more remembrance of transcendental knowledge. He had a great time for a while, he thought, until once he came to the river Krishna in South India. And just then, he wanted to smoke certain substances, right, when he saw a monkey come down the mountain. And that monkey went up to the river Krishna, touched the water to his head once, twice, three times, and then took bath in the river. And he thought, oh my God, this monkey is a devotee. This is not just a monkey. He is a devotee. He was a devotee in his last life, and he misbehaved, and now he became a monkey. And I'm also going to become a monkey. And he came back. Then he came back. Yes. So it is like this. Yeah. Ultimately, we are, for us, really, there's only two options: to be a happy devotee or to be an unhappy devotee. So we may as well Just embrace service to Krishna. We may as well embrace devotional service. Yes, I know we have material desires anyway. Just put them to sleep. My proposal is get a box, just an ordinary cardboard box. Put all your material desires inside. Write on it, my material desires. Put that box on the shelf. And just get busy in devotional service. Then one day, when you're not so busy, then you think, today I'm going to play with my material desires. And you take the box from the shelf, and you open it up, you look inside, and what? Who took my material desires? Half of them gone. Who took them? Who do you think took them? Huh? You don't know that Krishna is a chor? You don't know that he steals? You don't know?
He does. Krishna is well known for stealing. Yes. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Sarva Dharman Paritya Mamikam Sarnam Raja. Just surrender unto me, just serve me. Right? Take up devotional service. And then he says that he aham tvam sarva papevya moksha isyami masucha. I will take away your material desires, he says. So he says in the Gita, so don't be surprised when he takes them. So this is how it works. If we just get absorbed in devotional service, then our material desires will go away. But somehow or other, we think that my biggest problem in devotional service are these material desires. You know what I mean? I want to be a devotee, I'm into it, but somehow or other, I have these material desires, and therefore I have such a problem in my devotional service. That is my problem. If only I was free from these material desires. No, that's not the problem. The problem that we have is that we are careless and that we at times make offenses in chanting and in devotional service, offenses towards the deities, offenses towards the holy name, to the devotees. Because it's because of these offenses that we remain covered and are not advancing quickly. Otherwise, the material desires, they're already doomed. They're already gone. They will burn up to ashes. The log is already burning. Don't worry about the cracks and the holes in the wood. Oh, look at that wood. It's full of cracks and full of holes. Oh, look at me. I'm full of material desires. Oh, but it's burning in the fire. It's going to all turn to ashes. So in this way, with tivrena bhakti yogena, with great determination, great force, we must engage in devotional service. Akama serva kama vamokcha kama udaridi tivrena bhakti yogena yayeta purusham param. Whether one has material desires or whether one doesn't have material desires, doesn't matter. Engage with great force in devotional service, because then surely these desires will disappear. Surely. They will diminish quickly. And they'll go in the background. First they'll go in the background. And then gradually, one day they'll fall off the horizon. Yeah. Gone. You'll never see them again. Like that. Now the material desires may be right in front of us. But if you just turn to Krishna, and don't worry, how am I going to deal with these desires? Don't deal with them. Just serve. Just serve. And everything will come right. And that's, yeah, that's really how we can get above frustration. Otherwise, we will always be frustrated.
I don't know. It's nice here in Radhadesh, but maybe I should go to Japan. It's nice in Japan, but you know, I don't know. Maybe I should move to another temple. This temple is nice, but then there will be no end.
Like, we know it, right? Janani Vas, my servant and myself, we travel around the world, and non-stop, and then sometimes you get into this mood from, well, we're here only for a few days. You know? And then you come in the next place, and then you think, we're here only for a few days. And then the next place, well, only 3 days, and then we'll be gone. We'll tolerate it. And like that, never satisfied. No. Just, it is said the austerity of the mind is to be satisfied. And I like that very much. Since when is being satisfied an austerity? But the austerity of the mind is when everything is right, to just say, okay, now all the conditions are right, let me be satisfied with this. And now it is just shut up mind. Or you can try it in another bit flowery language. My dear mind, please be comfortable. It's quite nice here. But the mind is not always friendly.
No! I want
want to go. No, but my mind, you will be very happy if you just see the good side of things. No! So, sooner or later, we have to, as our Shamananda showed the other day, you know, tell, shut up mind, because he showed a mind up on the screen that was like a mind and a half, you know. that was quite a mind. So yes, but it cannot only be shut up mind. Should we have a whole? Is that the end? No, that's not the final movie that Shamananda is. It's just one in a series. It goes on. The mind will be back. It's not the last one we saw. The mind will be back. Because ultimately, we have to actually begin to appreciate Krishna and develop that higher taste. Only then will the mind finally be put to rest. And until that day, no matter where we go, no matter how old or young we are, the mind will still not be satisfied. Okay, ending on a high note. I leave it now up to you to respond to the question or comment. You know, the word offense sounds a little intense, right? And we don't like that word so much, you know. And I must say, if people tell me the whole day that everything I do is offensive, then as they did when I first joined, you know, when I joined in the beginning, the whole day devotees were telling, Prabhu, that's offensive. You know, Prabhu, you can't sit like that. That's offensive. Prabhu, a Vaishnava doesn't speak like that. That's offensive. Right? So, that sort of made me even more offensive at one point. Yeah. So, you know, you can't just the whole day think about that, like, how can I avoid offenses? How can I avoid offenses? Because it drives us mad. Yeah. But when we chant, we have to try and invest energy in the chanting. Not just chant, but really try and put some energy into our chanting to do it nicely. That's important. That will give us strength to be absorbed. And then it's recommended that throughout the day we are engaged in various types of service, and that will give us the that will tip the balance. Yeah, like for example, in other traditions, you know, I looked at the Jesuits, and then you have Ignatius de Loyola, who wrote a book, Spiritual Exercises, right? And it's intense what they're doing. What he's proposing is super intense, because when you have a sinful thought, yeah, you have to immediately sincerely repent. My dear Lord, please forgive me that I had this terrible thought. Yeah. And I herewith vow never ever to think in this way again. And I will undertake some austerities, a fast or something, to rectify myself from this. And I vow herewith to never do it again. And then you do it again. And then you have to go repent even more. My Lord, I mean, please forgive me. I had repented and promised that I would never do it again, but now I am have done it again. I am such a rascal. You know, please forgive me even more. You are forgiveness personified. And like this, right? It's like we wouldn't be able to do it. It's just I don't think I could surrender to that. You know, at one point I would just rebel and say, "Well, I am what I am. I am what I am." Therefore, what we recommend is simply chant good rounds, put some energy into a morning program, hearing chanting, and then stay busy in service. And that was Prabhupada's program. And if in between of all that, there's a little bit of an offense here, a little bit of an offense there, that will be purified in the process. But over a whole, we try to avoid them, you know. Try to be respectful. Respectful to devotees, respectful to the holy name, respectful in the temple, respectful to you know, the Bhagavatam. Respectful. To avoid offenses means to be respectful. The Bhagavatam, you know. Another book? No, respectful. Careful. It's the Bhagavatam. See, if it has a sleeping bag and everything. It's respectful. Yeah, take care. Anyone else? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's habit. It's the mind. The mind is habituated to certain activities, and habits are hard to break. So even if we know it's not so good anyway, that, you know, this is just the way I am, because a habit becomes a second nature. So this is sort of, yeah, we think this is how I can't change this. I've done this my whole life. How will I ever change? This is the issue. That we have to, that in the beginning we have to break some bad habits, and that's a bit of struggle. Yeah. So therefore, the transition from material life to spiritual life is not so smooth in this age. In the Vedic culture, it's very gradual and smooth. From Varna Ashram, slowly move on. But we come from, like, you know, outright degraded life, and then, you know, like where we had horns, and suddenly we have to have a ring above our head, and, you know. Like, I mean, it's like, you know, I don't know how many swear words would come out of my mouth before, many, and now every word has to be a word of praise and respect. And, you know, it's a big change. Yeah. You know, I mean, some of these nice devotees here were used to dress up in black leather and chains, you know. Also, some of these nice devotees there. I was in Spain, and they had an advertisement, right? And they had, like, a Harley Davidson with, like, one of these very long fronts, you know, like an Easy Rider type, right? And they had four Hare Krishnas sitting on it, like, you know, on a big poster, you know, some advertisement, right? And the makers of the advertisement thought, this is the most far out thing, you know, we put the Hare Krishnas like that. But, you know, I also thought it was far out because I knew those guys, and actually I knew that's how they really were, you know. They were right at home on that Harley Davidson. That's how it is. So, yeah, therefore, you know, we struggle a little bit. But then, because we're all together, and one says, Hari Bol Prabhu, then after a while we also say, Hari Bol Prabhu. So, association helps, you know. But then we should not get into the mood of, like, this guy and that guy, because the word guy doesn't quite make it in comparison to Prabhu, you know. Yeah. The guy, you know. As soon as you say guy, it's sort of like the respect goes down quite a bit, you know. Yeah. So we should not fall into old habits, but sometimes we do. Huh? We just. So therefore, the Vaishnava etiquette is good, and Vaishnava association, and lots of service, lots of it. I guess the time is up. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.